Blog Talk Radio.
I'm going to give the people what they want. Sensation, horror, shock. Send them out in the streets to tell their friends how wonderful it is to be scared to death.
That, of course, our honoree of the weekend, Vincent Price, here as we start to wrap up Valentine's Day weekend. Welcome to Eerie House Radio. I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show, here along with
Dave Binkley from The Weirdest, really bad movie. And we had such a great time last night, just that much fun, and I'm so glad we get to do it all over again, because we had so much of that wonderful interview with Victoria Price, and I can't wait to share the rest of it here tonight.
Yeah, I could listen to this thing 100 times. It's that interesting, and there's just such warmth, and it's easy to listen to Victoria Price. She has become quite the public speaker.
She has, becoming, a writer. And going out there and pushing her books, as you got to do. I know a couple other people who have written books, and they warned me when I started writing a couple of mine that I have. They said, I love writing. I hate all the promotion. But that's what you have to do once you have the book in order to sell it. You have to get out there and promote. But she has worked that certainly into an art form. And such a personal person, not only on stage when she was interviewed, but in person when you would go to have her sign your book or whatever you wanted her to sign.
Yep. Good people. I guess the acorn doesn't fall far from the oak or something like that. Because we all know what a class act Vincent Price was. And it was just so much fun digging up all those sound bites. And Dave brought us some tremendous radio shows last night. I mean, those were good shows. Pretty scary, nice twists in them. And, of course, when Vincent Price is in it, you can't go wrong.
And a little bit more of a fun one tonight with Favorite Story. We'll get a little bit more into what Favorite Story was when we get into that. But it's a little bit more of a fun story than what the two last yesterday were, really kind of darker ones. But, you're right. If you listen to the interview, when he was introducing Victoria Price last night, he talked about an experience he had with Vincent Price when he was a 13-year-old. And he was talking to Vincent Price, and Vincent Price almost got down, squatted down to look him straight in the eye, to talk to him. That is the kind of person that Vincent Price was, that he was, even with a 13-year-old kid.
Yeah, and through the more insight from Victoria Price, we also learned that he had quite a sense of humor. He took great humor in scaring people, but he could do straight-up comedy as well.
He could, somewhat by playing off the characters that he portrayed in the movies. That can be funny, but it's all a matter of time. If you're a great dramatic actor, it takes that kind of timing to do that. And it's the same with, like I've always said with Jack Benny, I never felt he was a comedian. I felt he was one of the great comic actors of any age. He wasn't the guy that stood up there, could do a monologue and tell you a joke. But he was absolutely fabulous at picking out a cast, working with people, and reacting to things. He was a great comedic actor, but he wasn't a comic.
He was definitely one of a kind. Good old Jack Benny. Jack has had Vincent Price as a guest. I think we may have played one of those previously. I know he did on the TV show as well.
And Vincent Price, he performed with, I know there more than one occasion on the Red Skelton Show, you could find Vincent Price. Even when, I think it was about 82 or 3 when Rich Little, the same time Rich Little did that HBO special of Rich Little's Christmas Carol, was the same year Red Skelton did an HBO special called Freddie Freeloader's Christmas Dinner, and Vincent Price was one of the guests there. You can find him, the two of them, on YouTube. Also, Vincent had great timing, and it appears he never minded having a great time with that great timing of his.
He knew his own physicality too. I mean, with just some of the expressions on his face, the same ones that could fill you with horror could make you laugh.
That's right.
There's also a great episode of Red Skelton from back in the 50s that we used to show on Erie House TV and will again sometime. Just Vincent, you just never knew where he was going to show up. As we mentioned last night, he was on The Muppet Show. Classic encounter with Kermit the Frog.
So, yeah, and like I said, I don't think there's any person, we've never heard anybody say a nasty thing about him, except some of those shows like Mysteries and Scandals. You can turn anything into anything you want. But as far as actually somebody talking bad about him or such, it's a hard stretch to find somebody that could do that about Vincent Price. Just as it's a hard stretch to find someone who would do that against the Boris Karloff, you know?
Yeah, the two of the gentlemen were that, and it just seems like everybody pretty much accepts that because there's no dirt on them.
And all very well read and a very almost a way scholarly, but boy, they could play some nasty people on the screen, couldn't they?
Yeah, yes, they could. Both of them beloved as actors, but terrified on the screen. I don't know if you saw, Dave, I posted on the Erie House Facebook page. I'd like to read a little something to you. It's a missive from a newspaper, and I think it's called If You Remember. It's called It Happened to Me, rather.
I did see that. I was hoping you would share that tonight.
I would like to with our audience, and the article reads as such. I was chosen from the audience at a radio show as the amateur to appear with a panel of experts. Most charming of the experts was Vincent Price. As we sat backstage in the last few minutes before showtime, I gathered my courage to remark with a smile, "Mr. Price, I saw you in House of Wax, and you were such a villain that I just hate you." "Madam," replied the tall, handsome actor with a bow, "that is the nicest compliment I have ever received. Submitted by Gene Desmond of Hempstead, New York."
Yeah.
And that's just Vincent Price all over.
Yes. And again, you can see what a compliment when someone comes up to you and it tells you what you did, even though it's about as far from you as what you are, some of those characters that he's portrayed, that they leave a lasting impression on someone like that. I think it's absolutely phenomenal.
One of a kind. There's some people that will never be replaced, and Vincent Price is certainly one of them. Davey, you were going to tell us a little bit more about the favorite story.
Favorite story, we've never actually used favorite story before, and favorite story was kind of based off of, it was a ZIV production, or actually Ziv, it was named after the guy's name was Fred Ziv, and he saw the need for transcribed programs for TV shows. It kind of really ticked off some of the networks because they put together some very high quality programs, like Boston Blackie. This is one with great music and all. This is they would take somebody and usually some kind of celebrity and ask them what their favorite story would be, or say, is it okay if we say this is your favorite story? Tonight's story was a favorite story, supposedly, of Spencer Tracy. So that is where the idea for a favorite story comes from. Let me read a little bit about background. This is from Time Magazine from Monday, April 28, 1947. It's called Radio, the Open End Game. Radio City's executive eyebrows, the hypersensitive seismographs of the broadcasting industry, were twitching excitedly. Cinema actor Ronald Colman's new transcribed show, Favorite Story, was having its premiere over Chicago's WMAQ. To many a radio man, it sounded like an early defiant mumble of an earthquake that might have upset the whole map of the U.S. commercial radio. Transcribed shows had Big Radio, NBC, and CBS worried. The Big Radio's power has always rested chiefly on its near monopoly of famous entertainers. Last fall, Bing Crosby fled the fold. He recorded his weekly shows and sold it to 208 ABC stations and over the head of at least one big network to some of its member stations. Total Crosby stations, 400. The advantages? Bing can record the show anytime he likes, and it can be edited before it reaches the air. If other big names followed Bing's lead, the big networks might lose control of their affiliates and might soon be torn apart. Transcribed show builders last week were smug, sure that Coleman's walkout for a guaranteed $150,000 a year. This is for radio. In 1947,
that was a ton of money back then.
Would someday become a stampede, although NBC makes transcriptions, at least one energetic independent was ready to, with staff and know-how to handle the runaways. He was a hard-eyed 41-year-old Frederick William Ziv, the producer of The Coleman Show and a big burglar of the open-end game. The Ziv outfit is currently releasing 23 high-rating open-enders, has 30 crack salesmen retailing them to advertisers all over the U.S. Ziv's chief sales targets, advertisers who can afford or don't want to buy airtime on full network. Some of the open ends are filled in by as many as 80 advertisers on 200 stations. Ziv's 1946 income is about $7.5 million. Again, we're talking 1946 there. And the pickings would be much, much fatter after an earthquake. Top 10 radio comedians got on the record, too. The top 10, Benny, Cantor, McGee and Molly, Gardner, Burns and Allen, Bergen, Amos and Andy. They formed their own company, Audience Records Incorporated, and this week we'll release an eight-sided comedy album of each act. The price, $4.50. The records will be banned from the air and from jukeboxes. They are designed, the company patent says, for posterity and for such things of the living as they would like to be the life of the party. So the folks at home will know when to laugh. The records were made with a studio audience. And one more note here, it says a transcribed program with blank periods for commercials so that it can be sold to any number of sponsors. A few Ziv produced open-enders, the Wayne King, Barry Wood, Kenny Baker, Easy Aces, and Philo Vance shows. And, of course, the Boston Blackie we talked about. We did also Boston Blackie for television and so many other great shows like Science Fiction Theater, Men into Space. A lot of the really, until the networks really got their feet going with all the network programs, Ziv was really a big player in early television.
Yes, he was, and of course, this is, as you mentioned, this will be the first time on Erie House Radio that we played Favorite Story. Now, this one's called Mr. Shakespeare with Vincent Price. Do we have a broadcast date on that?
Yeah, and since it was transcribed, we can tell you it was from 1947. That's all we could really tell you.
Close enough.
Approximately 72 years ago. Here we go, part one. We'll be back.
This is Ronald Coleman, inviting you to radio's most dramatic half hour, Favorite Story. Sad treatment of writers by the motion picture studios is a frequent subject of discussion here in Hollywood, especially among the writers. They will tell you that they slave and strain over their hot typewriters day in, day out, writing magnificent screenplays which are slashed and butchered before the cameras. And what does the poor writer have to show for all his work? Nothing but a miserable fortune. Well, frankly, there is some truth in the Hollywood writer's lament. For it has been said that even William Shakespeare himself couldn't get one of his plays on the screen without somebody in the front office rewriting his dialogue. Well, this gave a couple of writers an idea. Jerome Lawrence and Robert E. Lee decided to do a story about what might happen if the greatest of all playwrights could come back out of the past to work for a modern motion picture studio. They called their story Mr. Shakespeare, and it was broadcast around the world by the Armed Forces Radio Service. By vote, it was the favorite radio play of troops in every part of the globe. Spencer Tracy happened to hear it and named this amusing commentary on life in Hollywood as his favorite story. We're proud to bring you that splendid actor, Vincent Price, in the role of the Bard of Avon. So if you're in a mood to go behind the scenes in crazy, charming Hollywood, I think you'll enjoy the next half hour. It's Spencer Tracy's favorite story, starring Vincent Price as Mr. Shakespeare.
Done.
It's the most absurd proposition. This is a gag. Nat Wolf sent you here.
I don't know, Mr. Wolf. You have my references right there. I'm not a fanatic and I'm not a fake.
I suppose you want money in advance.
I wouldn't touch it. Mr. Green, I've come to you with a perfectly honest, straightforward proposition. If you're not interested, there are other studios in Hollywood.
No. Wait a minute, Mrs.
Tidball.
Mrs. Tidball, what do you expect me to do when somebody walks into my office and asks me to put a ghost under contract?
Mr. Green, I do not believe...
Okay, for whatever reason, that's the end of part one.
Really?
Yeah.
That's ended there?
Stop right there.
Okay, well, you know what? Let me. That's no fair. That is very strange. Let me.
3 minutes and 30 seconds of true joy.
Let me see where that is. It's got to be right here. There we are. Part two. Part one's got to be here. Part one.
Like Bill Conrad at the beginning.
Yes. He sounds like a studio head there. Mm-hmm. Let's see what's going on here. It's shooting up again. Let's see what happens. Do 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 do. Another one of those fun moments. As we get surprised there.
I think we should flame Blog Talk here.
Well, we usually do a pretty good job of that, and since it was uploaded to them, I guess I will try that. It looks like it should be there, just a rendering in a second there, Dale. And
Walt Dave is rendering his happy little self to death. I'm going to stick a nickel in the commercial jukebox.
Well, let's do that.
I used to be frightened by all the wine coolers I saw. I was scared I wouldn't pick the right one. Luckily, I did. It was the most refreshing one of them all, Sun Country Wine Cooler. You see, Sun Country is a blend of premium white wine and real fruit juice. That's what gives it its great taste. Sun Country, say, give me the real juice cooler. If you don't say Sun Country, you'd better sleep with your lights on.
Okay, this did the same thing, Dale. So you know what? Maybe before we get into a good part of part one, maybe we should play the third part of the Victoria Price interview while we while I re-up what I got here.
That sounds fine. I think our audience would love to hear more of this great interview from Gulardi Fest in October of 2018. We'll be back.
So my dad was married three times. His first wife was an actress named Edith Barrett. She's a really interesting woman. She was a big star, older than my dad, and she came from a legendary theatrical family. She was the granddaughter of Lawrence Barrett, who was the acting partner of Edwin Booth, who was the great Shakespearean actor of the 1800s, and who was John Wilkes Booth's brother. And so that was his first wife. My mom was his second wife, and my mom was English. She was a costume designer on Broadway. She designed a lot of famous shows on Broadway, came out to Hollywood to do a movie that my dad was in. And she and my dad were introduced by her best friend's parents, who he knew. And although she'd met him on the set, that's how they were introduced privately. And they were really an amazing team. They wrote cookbooks together. They did art projects together. They had business projects together. They made a lot of movies together. And they were married for 23 years. My mom was somebody who was pretty shy. I mean, she was very talented but didn't love all the trappings of fame. And in the end, it felt like a lot of pressure. My dad ended up falling in love with a British actress named Coral Brown in Theater of Blood. And he married her, and they were married for 18 years. But he and my mom stayed great friends. And so, they were married. He was married basically his whole life just to three different women.
Okay, more questions right here.
Which of his fellow actors did he enjoy and respect the most was the question. I'm going to answer that on two levels. His favorite actors were character actors. Actors like Spencer Tracy and Edward G. Robinson and Jimmy Cagney, he really respected character actors and English actors like John Gielgud, or of the movie actors of that sort of generation, Ronald Colman was his favorite. Of the actors who he was closest friends with, I would say he was great friends with Boris Karloff. They were really dear friends. They really loved each other. He was great friends with Edward G. Robinson. They were both art collectors, and they were really good friends from the 30s on. He was great friends with Eddie Albert, who you might remember from Green Acres. But a lot of his friends weren't actors. Actresses, great, great friends with Jane Russell, was a really good friend of his. And I would say the actress that he worked the most with was Jean Tierney, and he loved that pairing. And the actress he had the biggest crush on, but only worked with once, was Ava Gardner.
And interesting, in the Poe movies that I'm sure most of you have seen, like The Raven and The Comedy of Terrors, he was the guy in the middle, because Boris was very much a strict-by-the-script actor. And on the other side was Peter Lorre, who would just go off the script and say anything. And your dad could do both, so he was the perfect in-between guy.
Yeah, you know, he was the guy everybody wanted to work with because he was so, always came prepared, but he was a generous actor. So, you know, he always made his co-stars look good. I think my dad's closest lifelong friend because they met when Roddy was a boy. They did. My dad was in Keys to the Kingdom when Roddy was just a kid. Was Roddy McDowell. And Roddy was a dear friend to all of us, a dear friend to the family. I adored Roddy. Roddy and he got to do movies and stuff together, but also they did a lot of theater together. And Roddy was always there for my dad. He would come visit my dad when my dad was ill. He was great friends with my mom, but also great friends with Coral. So Roddy was one of his dearest, dearest friends. And you know, some people have a gift for friendship. Roddy had that gift. He was one of the, I mean, he wasn't just great friends to my dad. He was great friends with so many people and so many famous people like Elizabeth Taylor. And his parties were unbelievable. You know, the people, you'd go to a party at Roddy's house and it was like a who's who. And everybody got along because everybody loved Roddy. He was a really good person. And I had the really good fortune. I wrote for A&E Biography for a number of years. And I got to write Roddy's biography for A&E Biography. And it came out right before he died, and he got to see it before he died. And I felt like that was kind of my way of saying thank you to him. So.
Thanks so much. Right here, the glasses.
Did my dad know?
Oh, Ernie Anderson, who played Roddy.
Oh, yeah, I think they met, yeah. You know, he knew a lot of the horror hosts, and he traveled all the time, my dad. He did lectures, and he would lecture 60 cities in 65 days every year for 30 years on the arts. And he came to Cleveland a lot. He recorded, actually, if any of you have a chance, I gave a talk at the Cleveland Museum, I think it was last summer, and it was on collecting. I give a talk on art collecting, but while the audience was coming in, they ran the clips. My dad recorded a series of things about the Cleveland art collection, and they have it on tape, and it was really fun to listen to. So he came to Cleveland a lot, and to Ohio in general. He did a lot of stuff in the summers with the Kenley Players, so he was in Ohio a lot. And loved, you know, he knew that the horror hosts were who was making him popular to a whole generation of TV viewers.
More questions right here.
That was another example of him saying yes. I mean, my dad had no clue what kind of music Alice Cooper made, and it certainly wasn't. My dad loved opera, you know. But he just thought it was a cool and fun idea, and they got along great. Two Vincents.
Okay, more questions right here with the hat.
So the question was, of the stars who came to the house, who was my favorite? You know, kids really just like the grown-ups who are the most friendly to kids. And so I would have to say Uncle Eddie Albert was my favorite, and his wife Margot. Margot was an amazing woman. She was an actress. She was from Mexico, came to the United States with her uncle, who was Xavier Cugat, who brought the Roomba to New York City. And she was in films like Lost Horizons. But she and Eddie were an amazing couple, and they were just so full of love and life, and they loved kids. And Jack Lemmon, no, I never met Jack Lemmon. I would have loved to.
Do you have any memories of any, like, practical jokes or something that real funny that your dad did around home?
Oh, yeah. Well, my dad was a big practical joker. So when I was, how old are you when you lose your first tooth, like five or six or so, five? So we were going to New York, and my tooth was loose, and I was panicked that the tooth fairy wasn't going to know that I was in New York, because I wanted that nickel. You know, that nickel that the tooth fairy was going to give me, I was counting on that. So I said to my dad, you know, we're going to be in New York City. Is the tooth fairy going to be able to find me? And my dad said, oh, don't worry. The tooth fairy's got you covered. So we go to New York, and we're staying in a hotel room, and my tooth falls out. And it's my very first one. I'm so excited. I put it under the pillow, and I wake up the next morning absolutely panicked that the tooth fairy isn't going to have found me. And I look under my pillow, wait for my nickel. Oh, no. What's under my pillow is a disgusting, corroded denture. My father had been saving that denture and brought it all the way to New York City. Yeah, he knew that tooth fairy knew where I was.
Oh, man. Okay, more questions for Victoria Price. The brown shirt there?
Did he have a favorite drink? you know, he was of that sort of Mad Men generation where they drank. But I would have to say that what I remember him drinking the most were dark beers. So he liked a beer like Negro Modelo. He liked a dark beer, Italian beer or a Mexican beer.
What was the favorite thing your dad would cook for you at home that you liked that he would cook up?
We made breakfast together, so pancakes and popovers. I don't know if you guys have ever had popovers, but oh my God, his popovers were so good.
Okay, more questions for Victoria Price.
Did my dad ever try and scare me? Oh yeah, absolutely. He used to keep things that he knew would scare me in a drawer, and he would tell me to go get something out of that drawer, and it would be like, you know, a tarantula in a jar, and I would open the drawer, and I'd be like, ah! Yeah, he'd love to scare me.
Okay, more questions for Victoria Price. Over here, the...
Yeah, so about my dad's voice acting career in animation. You know, I have a friend who's considered sort of the... you know, the queen of animation. She's written the book on animation. She's one of the top animation directors and teachers. And she actually played Flim Flam on Scooby-Doo. And so she worked with my dad, and she told me that, like, my dad's voice is what they try to teach. Like, it's that iconic as a voiceover actor. But my dad started in radio. He played the Saint on radio, did a lot of old-time radio. And I really think that my dad, you know, his siblings were all very musical. And although he could sing, I think he thought of his speaking voice as like a musical instrument. And he loved he did a ton of animation. And one of the projects he probably worked on the longest was something called The Thief and the Cobbler. He worked on it for like almost 10 years, and it finally got made with many different casts. But yeah, he did a ton of things, like Scooby-Doo was a really fun one. But I think one of his favorites was actually Professor Radigan in The Great Mouse Detective.
And there's a lot of great radio shows that he had done way back. I highly recommend. We actually played it at Monster Bash with the lights out. Suspense, Three Skeleton Key.
Yeah, that's a really good one.
Wow. Yeah. You can find it on YouTube and listen to it. He did some great radio. More questions for Victoria Price. White shirt.
So, you know, he was kind of in between. He wasn't a huge mess maker. He loved to wash dishes. Like, he was the great dishwasher. So if he made the mess, he washed it and cleaned it up. But what I will tell you is that he cooked something till he got it right. Not like in one day, like for weeks at a time. So I felt like my entire childhood, all we ate was ratatouille because he was trying to get it right. I can't even look at ratatouille now. It's like the word ratatouille. I couldn't even see the cartoon ratatouille. And when I was 21, he decided he wanted to learn how to make the perfect creme brulee. And so, you know, he didn't make, like, little tiny, dainty little creme brulees. He made, like, a vat, a Pyrex vat of creme brulee. And then because he was, you know, Depression era, he couldn't throw it away if it wasn't good. You had to eat the whole thing. It was just the two of us. And so, like, after 3 days, I couldn't even button my jeans. And I kept saying to my dad, can't we just throw this away? I can't even look at creme brulee anymore. And he said, no, we have to eat it. I said, Dad, I'm getting fat. And he said, oh, it's not fattening. And I'd look in the trash can, and there'd be like pints of heavy cream and three bags of sugar. And a month it took for him to get that crust the way he wanted. I like barely got back to college in the clothes that I owned. So he would do something. He was like a perfectionist till he got it right.
Yes, he was. Hey, Dale, before we go forward back to favorite story, I think you need to explain yourself. When you teased Fogsbane with, you remember when he was dressed as a polar bear?
Yes. He was for those Sun Country commercials.
And as a Fogsbane, I did not remember that either. I'll tell you now,
yeah,
I did remember.
For some reason, that stuck with me. I remember that from the mid-'80s, and it's like, really? Vincent Price in a polar bear is a suit? All right.
I remember one commercial he did with his wife, and it was for a bank,
and they were talking about these reward points, and you could get things for these reward points. And she was talking about some things she got. She said, but Vincent got what he really wanted, his favorite thing. And there was a bug zapper out there. And every time it zapped a bug, Vincent was there staring at him laughing. You know, that's one of the commercials I remember with Vincent Price.
Awesome. We are going to do our best to try to get to everything we have for you tonight. We had a little breakdown with part one. We're going to start it over from the beginning. A favorite story with Vincent Price. Here is part one in its entirety.
This is Ronald Coleman inviting you to radio's most dramatic half hour, Favorite Story. Sad Treatment of Writers by the Motion Picture Studios is a frequent subject of discussion here in Hollywood, especially among the writers. They will tell you that they slave and strain over their hot typewriters day in, day out, writing magnificent screenplays which are slashed and butchered before the cameras. And what does the poor writer have to show for all his work? Nothing but a miserable fortune. Well, frankly, there is some truth in the Hollywood writer's lament. For it has been said that even William Shakespeare himself couldn't get one of his plays on the screen without somebody in the front office rewriting his dialogue. Well, this gave a couple of writers an idea. Jerome Lawrence and Robert E. Lee decided to do a story about what might happen if the greatest of all playwrights could come back out of the past to work for a modern motion picture studio. They called their story Mr. Shakespeare, and it was broadcast around the world by the Armed Forces Radio Service. By vote, it was the favorite radio play of troops in every part of the globe. Spencer Tracy happened to hear it and named this amusing commentary on life in Hollywood as his favorite story. We're proud to bring you that splendid actor, Vincent Price, in the role of the Bard of Avon. So if you're in a mood to go behind the scenes in crazy, charming Hollywood, I think you'll enjoy the next half hour. It's Spencer Tracy's favorite story, starring Vincent Price as Mr. Shakespeare.
Done.
It's the most absurd proposition. This is a gag. Nat Wolff sent you here.
I don't know, Mr. Wolff. You have my references right there. I'm not a fanatic and I'm not a fake.
I suppose you want money in advance.
I wouldn't touch it. Mr. Green, I've come to you with a perfectly honest, straightforward proposition. If you're not interested, there are other studios in Hollywood.
No. Wait a minute, Mrs.
Tidball.
Mrs. Tidball, what do you expect me to do when somebody walks into my office and asks me to put a ghost under contract?
Mr. Green, I do not believe in ghosts. The individual I shall recreate from the past will differ from your other employees only in that he shall consist of ectoplasm instead of protoplasm.
Yeah?
When this individual has arrived, materialized, shall we say, and you are completely satisfied, then you may draw me a check for $10,000.
Uh-huh.
You must understand why I'm doing this. My young niece, to whom I'm very devoted, will be ready for college this fall. I want her to be amply provided for. That is the only reason that I would consent to this commercialization of my talent.
How long does it take?
Well, that depends on a number of factors. I should say several hours. It's a great physical strain.
And how many people could you bring back?
Oh, just one. I wouldn't think of bringing back more than one.
Oh, frankly, Mrs.
Tidball.
Frankly, I don't believe you. But I'm a gambler, a little bit crazy, and this is Hollywood. You got yourself a deal. Your niece is practically in Vassar.
I've got a great idea. Have her get Boccaccio.
Oh, no. Boston will never stand still for it.
Then how about Milton?
Are you kidding?
In 14 years in the motion picture business, this is the craziest conference I've ever been in.
Now, look, guys. I know that this sounds out of this world, but somehow I have a feeling that this dame is legit.
Okay, Arthur. You're the doctor.
Can we get a team? Gilbert and Sullivan, maybe.
No. She'll only bring back one.
They could do a great hunk of stuff for the Andrew sisters.
Hey! How about Sarah Bernhardt?
She'd die at the box office. Get a name you can plaster on the billboards.
Cleopatra. Helena Troy.
I say, let's get the biggest name in music. Beethoven, Bach, Tchaikovsky.
No, Meredith. I think that's too specialized. We ought to get somebody who knows theater. Every department.
You'd look a long time for a better man than Shakespeare.
Yeah, how about that?
He's lasted. You can't deny that.
He's a good name.
I'll buy that. I think that's it. Shakespeare.
Hey, how about that? I know I'd come across
with
a good idea.
How old would he be?
How old?
Let's see. He was born in 15-something. That would make him about 400 years old.
Man, I'd sure like to collect his back Social Security.
Arthur, what gold?
I don't know. We'll just have to wait and see.
Quarter of one. I don't mind standing here in the rain, but we can't keep these newsreel boys here all night.
We're going to see this through, Tommy.
What's she got in there?
Nothing. Just an empty soundstage. When I left, she was just sitting in there in the dark. Now she'll probably knock on the door when she's ready.
Hey, Tommy! What hooks? Who you got in there? Yeah.
Fellas, I'd tell you if I could. All I can say is it's a surprise. The biggest surprise in show business.
Hang on to him, Tommy. This will make the cover of Life. Hey, that's it.
Get those cameras ready, guys. Hey, how about those guys? Can everything set? Here she goes.
This is what we've been waiting for. All right, slide back to the door, boys.
Wait a minute, Arthur.
What? Hold everything.
All right, hold everything, boys. Okay. What's the matter, Maury?
We've been checking up in the legal department. Arthur, you got to get rid of all these reporters and newsreels.
Hey, what is
this? Well, why?
Listen, the thing's a washout if it gets out.
Just a minute, Mrs. Tidball.
You can't write a binding contract with this guy. If Metro finds out you've got him, they'll have him in Culver City by tomorrow morning.
But how?
The guy's been dead 3 centuries. He's public domain.
Oh, I never thought of that. Tommy, clear these guys out of here.
Oh, Lord. Gang, I'm terribly sorry, but I'll have to ask you to leave.
I'm terribly sorry, Arthur, but ectoplasm just won't stand up in court.
Ah, that's okay, Maury. You're right.
Well, I guess I'll be getting back to the legal department.
Maury, don't go away. All right, I'm coming, Mrs. Tidball. Give me a hand, Maury.
All right.
Mr. Green, I should like to present Mr. Shakespeare.
Taking him.
The Beverly Wiltshire. I've reserved a suite for him.
Hey, don't you think it's kind of strange? He hasn't said anything.
Give the guy a chance, will you? Listen.
Gentlemen, I beg your forgiveness. I've been through a most harrowing experience. It seemed almost that I had been dead.
But you
were... Maury, how are you feeling, Mr. Shakespeare?
strange. Quite strange. What manner of conveyance is this?
Why, this is an automobile. You didn't have these in Stratford on the Avon, did you?
This is not Stratford. What place is this?
Wiltshire Boulevard.
Yes, we're in Beverly Hills.
In England?
Oh, no, in California, the United States of America.
I have never even heard of these places. In what direction do they lie from England?
West.
Not Ireland?
Oh, far to the west, across the ocean.
The New World?
Yes.
But I thought there were only savages here. Do they know of this in England?
Here we are.
Now, you'll be very careful, sir. The sidewalk's very slippery.
To what king does this palace belong?
Come right inside.
Why, it's like day.
All right, go over to the desk and register. It's room 704. We don't want to attract any attention in the lobby.
Don't worry about his clothes. Any place else in the country, yes. But in Hollywood, they'll just think he's another dress extra. I'll see you upstairs.
This way, Mr. Shakespeare. The elevators are back here.
Elevators?
Yes. And now, I know that this is going to seem very confusing to you. I can offer no explanation, but this is the 20th century.
20th century?
Well, somehow we've been able to bring you back from the past. I hope you're not angry or annoyed.
Angry? Why, this is the greatest thing that ever happened to me. What an idea for a play.
Going up.
Seven, please.
What's happening?
We're going up.
Well, hey, nonny, nonny.
Seven out.
Does this contrivance also descend?
Yes.
I should like to descend.
Descend, please.
Okay.
Oh, yes.
That's very far enough. Back to seven,
yes,
please.
Yes, I like this. Now.
This is our floor. This is where we get out.
Oh, no, no, please. I want to elevate some more. Elevate and descend. Elevate and descend. All night.
Well, where is he?
You know as much as I do. We sent a car over for him at 10 o'clock. He'd already left the hotel.
It's simple. He's a phony. He got scared.
I got his name on a contract last night. I had a handwriting expert and two Shakespeare scholars over this morning to look at his signature. There's no doubt about it. He's the McCoy.
It's 1 o'clock. Does ectoplasm eat?
I don't know. All I'm afraid of is that Zanuck got a hold of him. Come in.
Hi.
Who are you?
Well, don't you recognize me with my beard off?
Why, Mr. Shakespeare. Well, where did you get those clothes?
You like them? I've been shopping. This doublet is so much more comfortable than the old-fashioned ones, and look at the colors.
Yes. This is the head of our story department, Bill Mosher.
Hi.
Hi.
This is the most wondrous town I have ever seen.
Have you had lunch?
Already I have had strange and toothsome sweetmeats. Nut burgers.
Won't you sit down, Mr. Shakespeare?
Thank you.
Now, I would like to tell you a little about our business here. We produce motion pictures.
Motion pictures?
Yes, it's a lot like the Globe Theater, Mr. Shakespeare, only we can do anything you can imagine with sound and color and music. And we could show the same performance at the same time in 500 different cities.
Nothing in your world would astonish me.
Well, you understand, of course, that your reappearance, shall we say, is of a very startling nature. Now, for your sake, we want to keep it quiet so that you can enjoy your return. We think it's best to keep your name and your identity a secret.
Whatever you say.
Now, while you're here, you're on your own. Write what you want to write anytime you want to write it. Now, we're sure that it will be box office.
The studio has a lot of confidence in you, Mr. Shakespeare.
Do you mind if we call you Bill?
I prefer Will.
Mosher, show our new writer to his cottage and introduce him to his secretary. We expect great things of you, Will.
Will. Let's call him Will.
Not bad. I couldn't hear that when I had to re-edit that, so I can't believe I cut it off right at the right spot. Amazing. I did tell everybody that they were going to they were in for a much more fun show than last night, and this is a heck of a lot of fun here.
Yeah, they couldn't have picked a better guy to play Shakespeare.
They could not have. I've heard only a few of these, and one of Bob Hope's favorite one was The Moonstone, and they starred Frank Lovejoy in that. And I tell you what, that was just an amazing story. They are out there. There's I think close to 80 of these are available out there for everyone. So just didn't really fit into what we were doing in the past to team it up with something. So it's a really great to have just kind of a Vincent Price spotlight here where we could do something like this.
And we have just had a lot of fun bringing Vincent Price and sharing some insights into his personal life as well with these segments from the interview with Victoria Price. We'll have one more after we finish up our full feature here.
Yes, and I'm glad they didn't try to go into some kind of detail how they brought him back, but that this old woman could bring back one person from whatever time, whatever era to the studios. And I just thought what an interesting concept it was that she could do that. And then she just kind of disappears from the show. So kind of a, but
maybe it's,
yeah,
she's related to Victoria Price's tooth fairy. We don't know.
Look out for those dentures.
Yes. Something else. You got to love Vincent, and you got to love, this show. It's well, put together, good music. I'm enjoying this and,
yeah,
we might as well.
And that's one thing. These productions were top-notch. The music, the writing, getting Ronald Coleman to host all of them, the acting, you know, who did you have? Vincent Price and William Conrad. Come on. What more could you ask for? Oh, and Peter Lee Hayes is in there, too. You know, wonderful. Just a great show. Very enjoyable.
Well, let's find out what happens to Willie Shakespeare. Oops.
Will.
Will. Just Will.
Yes.
Will Shakespeare in part two of Favorite Story.
Here's act two of Spencer Tracy's Favorite Story. We rejoin our star, Vincent Price, as he brings to life the somewhat confused author of The Comedy of Errors. A peculiarly talented woman named Mrs. Tidball has managed to bring William Shakespeare back from the past, and he finds himself under contract to a big motion picture studio. However, the Bard of Stratford-on-Avon seems to be causing the studio executives a great deal of trouble.
I finished typing what you gave me, Mr.
Just Will.
It's quite difficult working for someone when you don't even know his last name.
Oh, last names are a nuisance. I wish your name were only Anne.
It is.
But nothing else. I once knew a woman named Anne.
You loved her.
It was a long time ago. Here now, let me see that manuscript.
Oh, I like it. It's a beautiful sonnet. Nobody writes them anymore.
Oh, that's too bad.
It's so strong. It's almost Shakespearean.
What did you say?
It's like Shakespeare.
How did you know?
Well, I studied him in school. I've read everything he wrote.
You studied me in school?
I beg your pardon?
Where did you pick up that name, Shakespeare?
Everybody knows Shakespeare.
Do they?
Certainly, right here in your own bookcase. Here, look at it.
The complete works of William Shakespeare, illustrated and annotated. For the love of heaven, why did they ever dig up this stuff? The Tempest, Coriolanus, Measure for Measure, that old wheeze. Romeo and Juliet. Say, as I remember, that one wasn't so bad. Twelfth Night. Hamlet. I used to play the ghost in that. I was sensational. Now, why the devil did they get a hold of these folios? I never even had copies of some of these myself. Look, look, here, in As You Like It. I remember when I made up this scene, it sagged in rehearsal. I thought up these changes and gave them to Burbage, and he memorized them. I never even set them down on paper. Oh, no, no, no. This part they have wrong. This isn't the way we used to do it. What the deuce is this? Titus Andronicus, indeed? I never wrote that tripe. Oh, and you think I'm mad?
No.
I can't explain. You're crying.
What would my mother back in Elyria, Ohio, say if she knew that I was secretary to... You see, the only other job I ever had in Hollywood was working for Stanley Roberts on an Abbott and Costello picture.
Well, what's wrong with Abbott and Costello? I wish I had them at the Globe.
May I come in?
Oh, come on in, Mr. Green.
How are you doing?
I've just finished something for you.
Oh, you have, huh?
Yes, here it is. See what you think of it.
This is poetry.
Great poetry.
Well, it's very nice, but we have no use for poetry.
You told me to write whatever I pleased.
Well, what we need from you is plays, screenplays, something commercial.
Plays? I never wanted to write plays. I'm a poet, a sonneteer.
But it's not box office. We've got to have something to show in movie theaters.
After 3 centuries, I thought maybe people would learn to appreciate beautiful words by themselves without having them strung on stale plots. I was wrong. Anne, take a tragedy. Cup of coffee, mine host.
Cream and sugar?
No, black. Very black. Spike, you're an intelligent citizen. I might even say a man of distinction. Suppose you were walking down Hollywood Boulevard. You see in bright lights in front of Grauman's Chinese, Romeo and the Cat People. What would you do?
Is Simone in it?
Granted.
I'd go.
Would it influence your behavior at the box office to know that Romeo and the Cat People was based on an omelet by William Shakespeare?
Here's your coffee.
Romeo and the
Will.
Cat People. Oh, hello, Anne.
Will, everybody at the studio's been trying to find you.
Welcome to Barney's Beanery, m'lady, the Mermaid Tavern with a jukebox.
Where did you go after they finished showing the rough cut?
Anne, where would any intelligent man go after seeing that picture?
But everybody at the studio is very happy with it. All they want's a little rewrite on the ending. That's why I've been looking for you.
Just a little rewrite on the ending. And you know better than that. They should throw the whole thing out and start afresh. Especially that title. The Capulet Family. I could take almost everything except the scene where Judge Capulet has a man-to-man talk with his son.
They want a sequel.
Oh, I'll give them sequels. Romeo's Blonde Trouble, Romeo and Juliet Haunt a House, Romeo's Swing Fever, Romeo and the Cobra Woman. Can I interest you in some black coffee?
I liked your first script. It's a shame they brought in all those other writers.
Have you seen today's Variety? The studio is dickering to sell my story on the radio as a summer replacement for Milton Berle. They want to call it A Date with Juliet.
Will, don't give up. You know why they do things like this, because they're afraid. They know these things work, and they're afraid to try anything else. But you can show them how.
Your lip rouge is... it's on crooked.
Will, you're 400 years away.
300.
Don't go back.
Give me the script. I'll fix the ending.
I'll see you in the morning. I'd better go.
What's her trouble?
She's in love.
With you?
No. No, she's in love with a state of mind. She hasn't found the body to go with it. Oh,
she's lovely. She's the kind of gal you like to write about. She's alive, you know?
You a writer?
I think so. Hey, listen to this. I just wrote it down. The jukeboxes mourn us. You like it?
good line.
You a writer, too?
Yes. How old are you?
22. Oh, I don't know where I get off calling myself a writer. I never sold anything. But it's all there. As if I had it in my fist. Words and lines. They want to sing.
Do you put them down?
I got a closet full of them. But there's no beginning and middle and ending. They just flow. Nobody buys that kind of stuff.
Well, then give them what they want to buy.
I don't know how to write plots. Stories, that's what they want, but I can't come up with any new storylines.
You know why? There aren't any. Ever read any Shakespeare?
Sure.
That guy never had an original plot in his life. The Comedy of Errors is a steal from the Menachmi by Plautus. As You Like It is straight out of Rosalind by Tom Lodge. Hamlet's just a rewrite job. Romeo and Juliet was lifted title and all from a dull little dilly by Arthur Brooke called Romeo's and Juliet. But do you know what he gave that old stuff? He gave it heat. And a few good lines.
Yeah.
You know what Shakespeare had when he was 22? The same thing you have. A fist full of words.
My name's Jimmy O'Neill. What's yours?
Me? Oh, call me Francis Bacon.
Call for Mr. Hellman. Mr. Jack Hellman. Telephone, please.
Ah, well. Good evening, Mr. Will. Welcome to the Brown Derby.
Good evening, Chelius. How are you?
Never better. You use your table, sir?
No, not tonight, Chelius. You can put me up front, right here.
So, we put you right here.
Thanks. You're holding my other reservation?
A table for two, Mr. O'Neill, right?
That's right. And, Chilius, put them in your famous corner booth across the dining room.
Ah, eavesdropper, eh?
No, I'm playing puck tonight. And I want to hear what goes on. The way every word from that booth carries clear over here is one of the wonders of Hollywood. What a great acoustical accident.
You think it was an accident?
Oh, they say there's Jimmy and Ann now. Be sure they get the right table.
Leave them to me.
Thank you.
Here we are, Mr. O'Neill. A table for you and the young lady.
Thank you.
Oh, thanks a lot.
Waiter, a menu for Mr. O'Neill.
Everything is set. How's the reception, sir?
Fine.
Ann, shh. You know, the first time I saw you, you hit me smack between the eyes, you know?
Well, I never thought we'd ever have a date like this.
You haven't told me yet how you got my phone number.
Oh, that's a secret. Let's order. They have pot roast on the wagon.
Can you see them from where you're standing, Julius?
Yes, yes.
Are they sitting close to each other?
Well, so-so. A foot and a half, maybe.
I'd like to order from the wagon, too.
Oh, we like the same kind of things. That's good.
What else do you like, Jimmy?
Oh, spaghetti, open cars, Joe Stafford, all kinds of things, lots of things, almost everything.
Great Dane?
Oh, love them.
Chelius, how far apart are they now?
Oh, 8, 9 inches, maybe.
You've seen a lot of couples come and go, Chelius. To your expert eye, do those two look like star-crossed lovers?
I don't know. This young lady still needs a little defrosting.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. Chelius, I want to close my account as of tonight.
Oh, you're going away?
Yes. Yes, I'm going away.
Flash, they're about 4 inches apart now.
Shh. You know what kind of poetry I like? I'm a sonnet man myself.
Well, what do you know?
I like the real old sonnets best.
Me too. This one's my favorite. Shall I compare thee to a summer's day?
Hey.
Thou art more lovely and more temperate. Rough winds do shake the darling buds of May, and summer's lease hath all too short a day.
They're holding hands. No inches now.
The old stuff still works. By heavens, I'm still in there pitching.
Well, there you have it. An approximate idea of what might happen if William Shakespeare had tried to write for the movies. Jerome Lawrence and Robert E. Lee imagined this fantasy called Mr. Shakespeare, and Spencer Tracy chose it as his favorite story. Vincent Price, who always gives such fine performances, gave us one more in the role of William Shakespeare. Vincent, we've really enjoyed having you with us on Favorite Story.
Thank you, Ronnie. It was a pleasure to be with you here on Favorite Story. You know, a lot of actors have the opportunity to play Shakespearean roles, but it's not very often an actor has a chance to play Shakespeare.
By the way, Vincent, our listeners may be interested to know that your secretary in this Favorite Story was Betsy Blair of the Broadway stage, known in these parts as Mrs. Jean Kelly. And the actor who played Chilius, the famous head waiter of the Hollywood Brown Derby, was Chilius, the famous head waiter of the Hollywood Brown Derby. Our thanks to all the cast, to Claude Sweeten for his splendid music, and to Spencer Tracy, who will soon be seen in another picture from Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, the studio which films so many of your favorite stories. Next week, a special treat for all you baseball fans, Casey at the Bat, the exciting and nostalgic story about the good old days in the Bush Leagues. It's the favorite story of the baseball immortal Tris Speaker, and it will star Lionel Stander as the mighty Casey and sports commentator Hal Berger as the manager of the Mudville Nine. We hope you'll be listening.
Shakespeare as portrayed by the great one himself, Vincent Price.
Yep, and the next week was going to be Tris Speaker. We had a mention of Elyria, Ohio in here, and Tris Speaker, who himself played for a bit of time as a Cleveland Indian. How do you like that?
All roads lead right here.
From Cleveland, yes.
Yes. All roads lead. Well,
Fun story.
It was. You know, it feels like something's missing right now.
Uh-oh.
Pray for me. Erie House Radio proudly presents a garlic moral of the story. With apologies to Gar. If you're going to come back from the past, bring a copyright attorney, won't you?
There you go. I'm sorry. I'm always looking for public domain myself. Always looking for public domain.
That's
hey,
right.
Before we get back to Victoria's Price, it's time for me to put a nickel in your... The commercial jukebox there, Dale. So let me reach out here and put my virtual nickel into the commercial jukebox.
You're blowing payday already, huh?
Yeah, I know. Taking out a loan.
Come a little closer, madam. I want to tell you about something your children will love. Monster vitamins. They're fun. They're screaming meanie. Babbly bat. Monster mobile. Monsters taste terrific too, mother. Your children should get vitamins by eating right, but when they don't, mother, monsters and monsters plus iron sure help. My children love them. Right, kids?
Yep. Fun.
Monster vitamins, chewy and gooey.
Yep. And with iron.
Yes. So we've got one more segment of the interview or Q&A, if you will, with Victoria Price, with even more about her famous father. We'll be back.
Okay, questions for Victoria. Over here, the brown shirt.
My writing process. So I write a blog called Daily Practice of Joy, but I'm taking a break from it right now, and I find that I write in real spurts. I handwrite every morning, so I journal every morning, I write something every morning, but when I'm really in a writing mode, I have to just kind of give myself the space to write. But really I think the thing that is most important as a writer is to show up every day and write. And then give yourself a break from it and then come back to it fresh. I'm working on a book right now called Here Be Monsters. And it's all about not knowing. So.
Back to the food thing. Can you relay to us your dad did some special stuff for crews on films with cooking. Didn't he cook for them?
Yeah. So I think the movie that my dad had the hardest time making was a movie called Witchfinder General. It was a young director, and the director was really mad that Vincent Price had been cast. He wanted Donald Pleasence. And so he made my dad's life pretty miserable. He got a great performance out of him, but it was not pleasant. And so my dad really had a hard time, and they were shooting way out in the English countryside. And so one of the ways that he kind of assuaged his anxiety is he would cook for the whole crew. He'd go out and he'd do all the shopping himself. And he'd make a meal for like 70 people.
Okay, questions for Victoria. Right here in the red.
Yes. Thriller. Yeah. So my dad, first of all, he recorded that in one take. They sat down and they did it just straight off the bat. And I think he had no idea it was going to become such a huge success. He just did it as a favor. But once it came out, I think he just thought, oh my God, this is so amazing. Here's this little thing that I did, and it becomes the biggest album of all time. And I think it's just so cool that like people like you know who my dad is because of Thriller. How cool is that?
That rap and then the laugh at the end is so iconic now, and it opened up a whole generation. Just that one little bit. And right here.
Yeah, so I've gotten to do a lot of fun talks about my dad and did some things on TCM, although I would love to get asked to be on one of their cruises. I haven't been asked to do that yet. But they were the first ones to ask me to do my top 10 list, and that was a fun thing to actually have to pare down 105 movies to my top 10. But it was a fun thing to do, and I will say that Laura is still my number one.
Okay, more questions. Dan again here.
If he disagreed with someone politically in person, he was always great about it. But if he disagreed with somebody politically on the television, he would write them little nasty letters but not mail them. I think the thing that he disliked the most were people who were cold. He thought, you know, it is really not that hard to say hello to someone and to be nice. And if you're working with someone, you know, there you all are together. Just jump in and be a part of the team. So the only actors that I ever heard him complain about were actors who just never warmed up. Like the worst thing he could say about someone is, oh, they were a cold fish. You know, because he was just such a warm person and he was such a heart-based person.
Okay, more questions for Victoria Price. Anyone here? Right here in the orange?
You know, I would have to say that my favorite place to write is I get up really, really early. I got up this morning at 2:58 because I just got back from Europe on Wednesday night. So I'm like on European time, and I sit in the dark. And, you know, and I have my dog, and it's this little cocoon, and it's this quiet time when everyone else is asleep, and I write. That's my favorite time to write. I also really write well on airplanes for some reason. Yeah, I think it's just because it's a way of sort of feeling like I'm not, you know, taking in all that energy around me. I'm just sort of focused on what I often write really interesting things on airplanes, so.
Okay, we have time for just a few more questions. Anyone have a question for Victoria Price? I'm getting pointed way over here.
St. Louis. Yeah, people often thought my dad was English, and his nickname is, when he first started the movies, was the Englishman from St. Louis, because he had that sort of Englishy accent. But he grew up in St. Louis. He was a Midwestern boy. And he grew up in St. Louis, lived in St. Louis, and went to college back east at Yale. And but his family remained in St. Louis. I go to St. Louis 4 or 5 times a year because he still has such a home base there.
And going back to when I saw Vincent when I was just a kid, there's one little thing that I remember distinctly when he was talking about things that scare people and scared him too, and he realized the whole, and I'm paraphrasing, you probably know it verbatim, he was talking about the Corman films, and he said how he was watching the audiences when he was seeing, like, the premieres and so forth, and that the guys never flinched. The girls did when there was, like, torture scenes and things like that. But when there was a scene when he walked through cobwebs. And he said that he felt the same way, that the audience, all the guys would go, ugh. He heard that from the cobwebs. It's just kind of an interesting.
Yeah, he always felt that men were really scared of cobwebs.
Yeah.
And so he played that up. I think it was in Pit and the Pentel, and I think it was.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Okay, more. We've just a couple more questions right here in the hat.
Yeah, a couple of regrets. One of his regrets was, you know, he grew up in the Depression era, and he was an art collector his entire life. But he always had that mindset that you shouldn't spend too much on things, so he would set himself a budget. And he often felt like, as an art collector, he didn't really, like, that the budget sometimes prevented him from following his heart in supporting some of the artists he wished he had supported. So that was one of his regrets. I think another of his regrets was that he didn't do more theater, especially Shakespeare in England. And I would say at the end of his life, I think he wished that the parts that had come to him sort of from the late 70s into the 80s in films had been a little better.
Okay, why don't we take one more question from the audience here. Anyone right here?
So my stepmother's ashes are scattered in that famous cemetery where all the Hollywood stars are. She's scattered in the white rose bushes. But my dad actually stipulated in his will that he wanted, he loved the ocean. And he was a deep-sea fisherman. We always had beach houses. He loved walking the beach. He collected seashells, and he loved deep-sea fishing. So he said in his will, I want my ashes scattered in the Pacific Ocean, but not in Santa Monica Bay because it's already too polluted. So after he died, I decided that we would scatter his ashes off of Point Doom, which is not spelled D-O-O-M, it's D-U-M-E, which is sort of this landmark where all of the places that he lived had been on one side or the other of. And I didn't know how you went, but I wanted to scatter them out at sea. So I looked in the yellow pages, because that's what it was in those days, and I thought, oh, we'll go up in an airplane and we'll scatter his ashes. So I call, and I, you know, the first number that I find, and the guy says, oh, yeah, absolutely, we can scatter the ashes. You know, how many people do you want to go? And I said, well, what's your capacity? And he says, oh, like 95. And I'm like, what is it, a 737? He said, yeah, as a matter of fact, it's a 727. I was like, yeah, me and 95 of my closest friends. I said, no, that's not how we're going to do it. So then the light bulb went off, and I found a fishing captain who also did memorial services. And so my brother and his wife and basically five of us, went out, and we sailed out to Point Doom, and we scattered my dad's ashes. And he always wore at the end of his life, because he didn't like to be recognized in the wheelchair when he wasn't feeling well, he wore this straw hat that would cover his face, and he had an African wooden necklace, and neither of us, my brother or I, could bear to keep it. So we tossed roses and his ashes and this African hat out in the water, and all of a sudden we saw something bob up and start to play with the roses, and it was a baby seal. And I felt my brother grab my arm, and he said, did Dad tell you? And I'm like, what? He said, he always told me that he thought he would be reincarnated as a baby seal. I was like, you're kidding. And then, so the baby seal played, and then he swam away, and then we all went deep sea fishing. And we all caught a fish, because that's what my dad would have done. He was like, are you kidding? You're going to be out to sea, and you're not going to fish? So he scattered in the water off of Point Two.
Victoria, do you have any final things you want to tell the Cleveland Goulardi audience here? Any final thoughts?
You know, I just want to say that I tell you guys that I don't like scary things, but I started going around talking about my dad in 2011, which would have been his 100th birthday, and I realized that, you know, I'm in this incredibly fortunate position. All of us love people. All of us have someone in our lives or many people in our lives that we love. I was a daddy's girl. I adored my dad. And I may not understand why you like to be scared, but we all love the same thing, which is my dad. And for me to get to, you know, come talk to people I don't know about someone we all love and get to share my dad and know that my dad lives on in your hearts, I feel like the luckiest person in the world. So, you know, I may not be a fan of horror movies, but I am a huge fan of horror fans because you guys keep my dad alive, and I cannot tell you how much that means to me. So I just want to thank you for being here. It really means the world to me, and I mean that.
We want to thank Ron Garstek of Goulardi Fest and Victoria Price here at Goulardi Fest 2018.
How he can move us emotionally after he's been gone almost 20-some years now.
Yeah, it just, he's one of these people that 100 years from now, his movies will be moved, well, they were moved from film onto videotape, onto DVDs, onto digital downloads, and he'll be in the next two or three or four incarnations of whatever kind of video entertainment there's going to be, I'm sure.
Well, if we have anything to say about it, that's why we bring you these shows, folks, because someone of that caliber just should not be forgotten. Just a guy who's impacted my life just as far as, you know, the entertainment I like and things like that. He was such a warm man, you'd never expect him to say anything like...
I sometimes feel that I am impersonating the dark subconscious of the whole human race.
And sometimes he was.
And sometimes he was, yes. It has been a tremendous, tremendous week. And hey, I did want to share one more thing with the Mr. Shakespeare story. It did make me think a bit, as I was sitting here listening to that, about the Twilight Zone episode in season 4, the hour long, called The Bard, where the guy called up Shakespeare. He thought himself a writer, and he called up Shakespeare to help him ghost some plays, some movies that he would attach his own name to. And it was just a fun Twilight Zone hour as well. So just a fun show. Just as this was a fun show, and hearing all these great stories coming out of Victoria about her dad and the family experiences that she shared. I mean, just when you don't think of Vincent, when you think of Vincent, you don't think of him as the great family man that he obviously was.
Yeah. No, we tend to think of them as either our favorite villains, whether it be Dr. Fibes, whether it be the sculptor in House of Wax, whatever your favorite role or memory of him is, you didn't see him play too many characters where he's caring dad.
Yeah, no, that's right. But yeah, so it just... a wonderful, it's been a very, very fun and I guess you could say educational weekend as well, getting to hear all these all over again after we recorded them from Goulardi Fest. You and I were busy working the booths, and we didn't really get a chance to enjoy it when it happened. But my goodness, editing the recordings down and cleaning them up and then sending them to you and you cutting them up, we both got to really enjoy this several times over, and we will again. And now anybody can go into the archives and hear last night's and tonight's program and hear this wonderful, wonderful interview with Victoria Price, as well as some great Vincent Price acting on the radio stories.
Perhaps we'll bring it out again someday in a year. Who knows? Maybe we'll have more and new material. Dave and I have both expressed a desire to get out to Monster Bash, which Ms. Price does frequent from time to time, and who knows? Who knows what we'll bring you? We've got guests coming. We've got future shows that you will just not believe. More and more classic radio.
And some people that are trying to do some other dramas and audio dramas and things like that. So, you know, it's really kind of neat to see what people are trying to accomplish today. You know, there's when you're doing an audio production, you're doing it for the love of it. You know, there's not going to be the money in there for it. And
yeah, don't we know that? Yeah.
But so when you love something like that and you nurture it, it's really neat to see what people are doing out there, that they're putting their efforts and energies into it. Yeah, we're going to have a few of those coming up this year, and one just the end of next month. We just got that one nailed down, and we're going to have a great time with that as well.
Yeah. Just like some of the other guests we've had here, Mike Arnett recently, also a creative man doing new material, and we've got another coming your way soon. Next weekend,
yes,
it's all about the cats.
It is.
Starting with Feline Friday, we've got Mysterious Traveler, The Strange Dr. Weird, and Frontier Gentleman. Ha-ha.
And that was that's another program we haven't shared here yet. That's one of the two westerns that John Daner starred in.
Yeah.
This Frontier Gentleman, and he what was the other one where he's Half Gun Will Travel, and he starred in the radio version of that. So
yeah, it's Paladin. Mm-hmm.
It's Paladin, right?
And then we wrap up on Saturday. It's the return of CBS Radio Mystery Theater with a little tale called Kitty. So
yes.
We're giving up the cats next weekend. and then, blah, blah. After that, the following weekend, it's blood-sucking weekend. That's right. Vampires with Hall of Fantasy, Sherlock Holmes, and more CBS Radio Mystery Theater that weekend.
It's just... So much fun coming your way, and we have the honor of sharing it with you right here, and of course, as always, if you are looking for something to do, go into the archives where you can find all these great shows and so many more here, and you'll hear also be able to hear when we've got the Wheel of Radio going and things like that. So take use up all your vacation time and have some great entertainment.
That's right. All right. Don't quit your job. Use your vacation time. Otherwise.
Yeah.
I alone remain to bring delivery of your pain.
The Abominable Dr. Fibes, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I believe so.
He spoke in that hesitant manner, and he sounded kind of... mechanical.
He didn't speak in that movie.
That's right. He attached himself in with a cord to a speaker.
Yes, he did. So it was mechanical. Yep. Odd movie.
Well, yes, 4:15, whomever you are, thanks for sticking with us throughout the whole show, along with Fogg's Bane. And I hope you enjoyed all the Vincent Price treats we had for you tonight. We'll do it again sometime. We have to do Karloff sometime soon.
Absolutely. And
plenty of Boris.
Let's see if we can get some personal interviews Karloff did there as well, or maybe include some of his I think he did they did a You Bet Your Life on Boris, I believe, and we could take some clips from that perhaps. So
yeah. Too bad we can't do it on Jr. night. We only have one show. We'll work it in, though. We've got a very special Lon Chaney Jr. show to share with you in the future. But for those of you that listen tonight, thank you.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him. When next we meet in Frankenstone, don't come alone.
Ooh.
Very good. Very good.
This was so much fun. I mean, when you have a subject like we had, though, it's kind of easy to be fun.
Yeah, well, it is. And who doesn't know, you know, of all the things that you have out there, who doesn't know Vincent Price and doesn't have some kind of appreciation for at least some of the things that he's done, you know?
Yeah, and you might not even like all of his movies. I do. But you might not, that's fine. But there's got to be some that you'll like, even if they don't fall into the horror genre. Films like Laura and Shock, which, yeah, you could argue Shock is a horror story. It kind of is. It kind of isn't. But things like that.
Yeah, I was surprised when I found Shock. I didn't find it until it was in public domain, and then they'd go ahead and host it then. So that was I thought that was very interesting. And it was a neat movie. It was just it wasn't really a horror, but it was. But it was a very, it's just a very good way to spend your time.
It was, and he's one of, I think both Boris and Vincent are guys I regret not having had the opportunity to meet. You know, I'm sure, knowing what we know about Vincent, he would have been an interesting person to interview, whether it was with my old affiliations with Creepy Castle or here with Eerie House. It would have been just fun to spend some time with him.
But again, he is timeless, and watching the stuff that he did even early on, and he didn't always necessarily play the bad guy. Usually yes, but always no. So it did make it. I think he's one of those timeless artists that I feel. That he's gone through from film to VHS to DVD onto digital transformation, and whatever transformations in there, he'll be through at least two or three more before people really start not knowing. I mean, yeah, there are going to be some people who just don't know and don't care of certain generations, but anybody who truly appreciates a fantastic actor or some great artwork of that kind of nature, and appreciates that, he will be there.
Well, people that teach film are never going to forget or omit Vincent Price. I know Scott Essman, who posts a lot. He's a huge fan of horror. I mean, he teaches all types of film. But he's very knowledgeable, very well versed, and Vincent Price has come up more than one time in his classroom, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm sure. So it is I'm surprised thinking about it. You know, although he did quite a bit of television, it's odd that he never did a Twilight Zone, as many episodes as there are. You know, so there's some classic television he did, but
probably just didn't get to happen.
I bet if he'd been asked, he would have said yes.
That's the impression we got from Victoria. He liked saying
so
yes.
So I blame Rod Serling for that one.
Okay. It's on you, Rod. You have something to answer for when we pass into the pearly gates of horror heaven. We have questions.
You know, we'll still be interviewing when that happens, you know?
I know. Well, until next weekend when we have some wonderful vampire tales for you, be here at 8:30 Eastern Standard Time on Friday. If you'd like to hear us live and hang out with us.
Yep. Yep, back to good old horror stories. Fantastic.
More horror stories. That's what we like. Yep. Horror, sci-fi, and fantasy. Vincent Price can do any of those and has.
Yes, he has. And as the music winds down, I guess it's about time to cue Jimmy, isn't it?
It certainly is. Good night, Bob.
Good night. Good night. Good night. It's time to say good night. Good night. Good night. What more to say but good night? We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo. Arrivo, up we the same, and ink-a-tink-a-doo. Good night. Good night.
Good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever.
I'm going to give the people what they want. Sensation, horror, shock. Send them out in the streets to tell their friends how wonderful it is to be scared to death.